Hi, and welcome to another edition of Right on Rangers Live, coming at you immediately after a 3-2 Texas Rangers victory over the Chicago White Sox. Never a doubt, am I right? Never a doubt against the worst team in baseball, but the Rangers get the win. They have now made it 3 wins in a row. It's a good day to be a Rangers fan. And we're going to get into everything here in just a minute, all the highlights, the key moments, the scoring. We'll go through some box score review with you, take all your comments and questions. First of all, thank you so much for being a part of our show today, whether you're watching live or on the replay. If you're not following, if you're not subscribed to the channel, please do so. I would be very, very grateful. Of course, here at Right on Rangers, y'all that have been with me for a while know the drill, but we cover everything sports. But we put a big emphasis on all the teams we love from the great state of Texas, including the Rangers and especially the Rangers during baseball season. Once again, thank you for choosing Right on Rangers for your Rangers content. Let's get into the post-game analysis for today. Let me check out the chat, see who's with me. Tristan, what's up, my guy? Go Texas Rangers. We needed this win for sure. Really, every win this week, I mean, is just so huge at this point. Every win this week is monumental. The Rangers, we kind of said it on the live, I think it was last night, even a couple of nights ago. This is really a week where you need to win 5 games. You got 7 games this week. You got 4 against the White Sox. You've got 3 against the Blue Jays in Toronto over the weekend. You need to win 5 games this week. Rangers so far have won 2, 3 more to go, and you've got a number of different opportunities left. You got 2 more games. You got 5 games left. You got to win 3 of the next 5. I think that's very doable. Win 3 of the next 5. You got 2 against the White Sox, and you've got 3 left against the Blue Jays. I think when you put it that way, it seems very reasonable. Let's just win 3 of the next 5 ball games. We've got 2 against Chicago, the worst team in baseball. And I kind of feel like we've weathered the storm with the Chicago White Sox pitching. Of course, the White Sox threw Fetty yesterday. Fetty has been very, very good. His ERA was under 3 in his last 15 games pitched. Of course, Crochet, who we saw tonight, threw in the All-Star game, the subject of a lot of trade talks. So the Rangers, I really feel, kind of weathered the storm yesterday and today with the White Sox starting pitching. The bullpen has always been a weak point for the White Sox, and you kind of saw that on display, especially last night. Tonight, it was really pretty tight all the way through the back end of this one. But the Rangers were able to tack on a run late, which is so huge. Y'all know something that I have said over and over, something I have got on this Rangers team for, is their inability to score runs late. And the run that they put in, and what was it, the bottom of the 8th, the Josh Smith kind of bloop single, whatever you want to call it, that was huge. Because, of course, Josh Bors gives up the solo bomb to Andrew Benintendi to lead off the top of the 9th inning. That would have been a tie ball game without that insurance run. So the Rangers are able to get a much needed insurance run in the bottom of the 8th inning. And it made all the difference in this one. Again, the Rangers win this one 3-2. Great win. It's 3 in a row now. Now we do some scoreboard watching, right? You've got the Astros right now currently, I believe, losing to the A's. A's are up 3-1 in the top of the 4th inning. Mariners are tied 0-0 in the 5th in Seattle. If we could get 2 more losses, we're cooking with gas, man. 3 games back. If the Rangers are to gain some ground tonight, they're going to need 2 losses, 1 from Houston, 1 from Seattle. If Seattle and Houston both lose, the Rangers would be 3 games back in the AL West. 3 games back with 61 games to play. Very doable. You're talking very realistic hopes. 3 games back with 60 plus to play. So we'll see what happens tonight. It's very possible one of those 2 teams, Seattle, Houston, may come away with the win. Hopefully one of them at least loses. But right now, the Rangers putting together some wins. You love to see it. You can't ask for anything else. CY, Chris Young, Rangers president of operations, came out and basically said he wants to see this team go on a 4 or 5 game win streak, get hot this week. And that would make his decision a whole lot easier on whether to buy or sell. I hope, much like a ton of you Rangers fans out there, I hope that the players make it hard on him. I think if the Rangers, though, if they can win 3 out of 4 or sweep the White Sox, I find it really hard to believe the Rangers are going to be hard sellers. They may still be soft sellers. What do we mean by that? I think, again, you could still see maybe a Mike Lorenzen type getting traded, somebody on an expiring contract who maybe theoretically you don't need to make the playoffs. Lorenzen has been huge for us, but I think we can understand with Malley coming back, with DeGrom most likely coming back within the next 3-4 weeks, you're going to have a surplus at the pitching spot. Bradford is going to be coming back here in a couple of weeks. You've got a ton of pitchers. You could probably part with a guy like Lorenzen. I don't know if they will or not. I'll be really curious to see. I do think if the Rangers are able to win 3 of 4, or most ideal, sweep this series with the White Sox, you are really, I think, looking at Chris Young calling off the sale of a lot of these expiring contracts. I know that there's been a lot put out there in the media. Ken Rosenthal was, I think, on a few different podcasts today talking about the Rangers and the fact that they are going to, if they don't win some games here, pretty much control the trade market. The Rangers have a lot of guys that a lot of teams would love to have. Evo, Robertson, Yates, Heaney, Lorenzen. There's a ton of guys that there's a ton of interest in a lot of our players right now that are on the expiring contracts. So I would love for the Rangers to just put it all to bed, win about 3 or 4 more in a row, and then you're playing 500 baseball right before the trade deadline, maybe 2 or 3 games out. I don't see how the Rangers can be sellers, maybe beyond, like I said, a guy like Lorenzen. I don't see how you can be sellers if you're around 500 at the trade deadline. Right now, 4 games out of first place. I think somebody commented, I don't know if it was on one of the fan groups that I'm a part of on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, but I think somebody basically commented, the point was, look at how quickly the Mariners lost their first place lead. Let's really examine this. I don't have the dates in front of me. Maybe some of y'all remember. If you do, drop it in the chat. Do you remember like a month ago when the Mariners were up 10 games in the division? That was a month ago. The Mariners were up 10 games in the division. The Rangers were out 10. And now look at the lead. It's down to 0. Mariners and the Astros are tied for first after the Mariners held a double-digit advantage in the division. So for me, 3 games, 4 games, I really don't see how you can be a seller. I think the Mariners are fading a little bit right now. We've talked on the show. The Mariners have one of, it might still be the lowest batting average in the major leagues. Mariners do hit the long ball. They do have some good starting pitching. So that was what was keeping them afloat above in terms of the division. But I think things are catching up with them a little bit. You're seeing things even out. Mariners are struggling a little bit right now. I hope that continues tonight as they play the Angels, although they are at home. I really, really hope that that struggle continues. And man, if the A's can just keep beating up on the Astros, looks like they just tacked on to their lead. A's are now up 4-1 in Oakland over Houston. And right now, again, the Angels, oh wow, look at this, y'all. We're going to keep bringing you the breaking scoring updates. The Angels in the top of the fifth have just taken a 1-0 lead, and they have bases loaded with nobody out. Could we get 2 losses, Seattle and Houston, stack them up and be 3 games out? Byron, I love this, man. We are so back, baby. Look, I'm trying not to get my hopes up too high, but I am not even going to lie to y'all. My hopes are going up quickly with how the Rangers have been playing, winning games, gutting it out. It's not necessarily pretty these past few games. You heard my opening comments. Never a doubt against the worst team in baseball, right? But look, you're winning games. You beat Baltimore on Sunday, a very, very good team. Now you've won the first 2 against the Chicago White Sox. You're supposed to do that. I'd say win at minimum 1 of the next 2, preferably sweep. I think the Rangers can definitely get 4 out of 4 against the White Sox. I thought it was great that they were able to get a win today without Corey Seager, although he did pinch hit in this one. But no Corey Seager today, and you're able to manage a win. Outstanding. We'll see what happens, but I think the Rangers have a very good chance to have a positive week. I think 5-2, the record that we said they had to have, and they do have an 8th game on Monday right before the trade deadline in St. Louis. That'll be an interesting game. You never know. That game in St. Louis on Monday night could be monumentous with the trade deadline the very next day. I think at 3 o'clock Eastern time or something like that. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what the time of day deadline is, but that's going to be a very big game potentially. If the Rangers like sweep this entire week, okay, now that Monday game probably isn't quite as big. But if the Rangers do manage that 5-2 or maybe they go 4-3 or something like that, that Monday game in St. Louis could become huge. So I'm very curious to see what happens down the stretch. I do think we can all agree CY and the front office don't want to sell. I don't think that that's the mentality right now. Chris Young was interviewed recently. I think it was a Sports Illustrated interview, like within the last day or two. And he said over and over again how badly he does not want to make that tough decision to sell. Again, he talked about let's get hot for 4 or 5 games and kind of take the decision out of my hands. I hope that's what happens. Also, of course, he acknowledged he's going to do what's necessary to keep this team competitive in 2025 and beyond. But I think, I know there's some pessimistic Rangers fans out there. So, I mean, let's put that on the table. You're not talking to a pessimistic fan right now, but I think those of y'all that have watched me for a while know that. We're very glass half full here at Ride On Rangers. We absolutely will call it like we see it. We'll use data stats all day long to prove our points. But look, we want to see the Rangers do well. We want the Rangers to be competitive this year. I don't want to see the Rangers sell off anybody of significance. Evo, any of those guys, Andrew Heaney, none of those expiring contracts do I want to see walk out the door. But we'll see what happens. But we're going to get into the game. We've kind of talked it broadly in general about the Rangers and the state of the team up to this point while appreciating the win, albeit a close one, against the team with the worst record in baseball, the Chicago White Sox. But look, they did face two very good pitchers back-to-back. Crochet only went 4 innings. He's kind of been, I think, on a pretty big workload of late. They didn't let Crochet get very deep in this one. He did have 7 Ks, only allowed 2 earned runs in 4 innings. Fetty has been very good as well. So look, I think that the Rangers have kind of weathered the storm with the quality Chicago starters. I think as you get into the game tomorrow and the game on Thursday, you're going a little bit downhill. That doesn't mean take it for granted. That doesn't mean foregone conclusion the Rangers are getting the sweep. But you are going to be facing some easier starting pitching over the next couple of days. So that is a positive, no doubt. Let me go ahead and check comments here real quick as I segue to going through some of the highlights of the game and the key contributors. Natalie says, Corey's timing has been off all year and he's been fouling off pitches, which has been uncharacteristic from the past. Garcia totally off as well. Look, we do have to give Dolly some props. I think it goes without saying. He had one of the only RBIs in the game. There were 2 RBI total. The third run came off of a double steal, basically, a kind of a first and third situation with 2 outs. Dolly stealing second base, stopped short of the bag, and the Rangers are able to get that runner home from third to push it to a 2-0 lead after Garcia clutched up in the bottom of the first inning. That was a clutch, I believe, 2-out RBI single. It was 2 outs. So we got to give Dolly some love. He came through in the first inning, came through with a 2-out RBI single, and I don't think a lot of people probably had a ton of confidence that that was going to happen in that at-bat, and I'm one of them. I'm going to be totally honest with y'all. I was not expecting a 2-out RBI from Dolly in that spot. No disrespect to him, nothing against him, but with how Dolly's been swinging lately, it wasn't what I was predicting was going to happen. Very glad to be wrong. Got to give Dolly his flowers and respect and credit today. He did come through in a big moment in the game. The Rangers looking to jump on Garrett Crochet early in the first inning did just that. Those 2 quick runs, I think, just took the weight off, even though the Rangers really didn't add on again until the 8th inning. I think that really took the weight off. I do agree with what you're saying about Corey Seager. I think just in general, this entire team, let's not get too specific. I think a lot of us have noticed that this team has really struggled with fouling off way too many great pitches to hit. I know I've kept count in games of the number of foul balls that the Rangers have hit. I've had games where I've counted 20 to 25 foul balls throughout the course of the game. And look, I don't know what the average is. I would love to know what's the average number of foul balls that a team hits in a game over the course of the 2024 season. I'd love to see that stat. There have been some games where the Rangers have fouled off 20 plus pitches. And I think there are 2 ways to look at it. One is, well, they're being competitive in the at-bat. It's a grind-it-out kind of club. right? They're not going to be letting anything get by them without taking a hack at it, aggressive. And those things I think you can say about the Rangers, but I do think there's something to be said. When you get your pitch, you got to drive it, right? You can't be fouling off pitches right down the middle. I think the former part of what I just said, the grind it out, the aggressive, the toughness, the gritty at bats. Okay, we're talking about, you know, pitches that are not hitter's pitches. The sliders and the curveballs low and away that you just get your bat on. Okay, that's fine for fouling it off. We're talking about Rangers players, and this has been a season trend, fouling off fastballs right down the middle. That's not ideal. I mean, fastballs right down the middle, you have got to connect with. And the Rangers have not done a good enough job of that. The fastball trouble has been well chronicled throughout the season. I think it is getting a little bit better, but I do agree the Rangers have to be better hitting the fastball. Way too many foul balls on pitches right down the middle, whether it's hung breaking balls or grooved fastballs. Rangers do have to be better in that regard. I did see that the Cardinals beat Paul Skeens today. Appreciate you tuning in, by the way, bud. Thanks for the comment as well. Paul Skeens went into the ninth inning. I think it was a 1-1 game. Tough luck loss. Kind of like the Rangers pitchers this year, right? It's a 1-1 game, and somebody's got to be the loser. And it's been Andrew Heaney and some of these Rangers pitchers that have been great all year but just got no run support. You feel bad for Paul Skeens. I mean, that Pittsburgh offense isn't terrible, but it's definitely not a juggernaut. John, what's up, my guy? Thanks for tuning in. John says, these pitching performances, Gray, were you surprised he was pulled with two outs? Yes. Yes, I was. I'm actually glad that you brought this up because my lead-in, after I get through with the comments here, was going to be John Gray. So John Gray only threw 80 pitches tonight. Only threw 80 pitches. Now, look, it all worked out. So I always say when the Rangers get a win, it's a lot more enjoyable to be nitpicky knowing, hey, we got the win. It's all good. This stuff really doesn't matter. It's kind of the minutiae of Rangers baseball that the hardcore fans love getting into. But look, I was very surprised John Gray got pulled, especially right after that incredible play by Jonathan Ornelas. So I hope that y'all saw Jonathan Ornelas first out of the eighth inning. First out of the eighth inning. That was, was that the second out, I believe, of the eighth inning? And right after this play, Gray gets pulled, but Ornelas made a Derek Jeter-style jump throw from shortstop. He's going to his right, gloves the ball cleanly, jumps up mid-air, heaves it over to first base, and they get Tommy Pham by half a step. That's got to be like a top 25 play in Major League Baseball this year. I mean, I don't know. Look, I've told y'all this admittedly. All my time pretty much gets poured into watching the Rangers. Occasionally on a Saturday morning, I watch like the 10-minute episode on all the games that MLB puts out, like fastest 10 minutes or whatever it's called. So I don't always get to see everything going on around the game. I check headlines, but I feel like that's got to be a top 25 play in Major League Baseball this year. That was an incredible play from a rookie player that honestly hasn't had great success with the bat. He did have a few nice games. I think it was a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. Tonight, don't know if he did anything special up at the plate. Looks like he was 0 for 3, hitting 176 on the year. But he made a couple of plays tonight, y'all. That play in the eighth inning, he made another nice play going to his left on a ball that he was kind of shading to the middle. So Ornelas really, I think, did a great job at shortstop in Corey Seager's absence. I was a little bit surprised to see him at short. I kind of thought maybe they're going to go Josh Smith at third base with Seager, Josh Smith at shortstop with Siegs out. So I was a little curious about the Ornelas move, but look, that's why Bochy and the staff get paid the big bucks. Jonathan Ornelas, look, this might be a hot take, so feel free to disagree. Y'all know I don't get too sensitive. If you don't agree, say it. Is Jonathan Ornelas a better defensive shortstop than Seager? I mean, I just said to myself after the dust had settled from that play in the eighth inning, the second out, the Derek Jeter jump throw from Ornelas, I said, I don't think Corey Seager can make that play. Like, I don't think Seager makes that play. So, look, clearly Jonathan Ornelas is miles behind Seager offensively. So don't get me wrong here. We're not talking about the bat. But I think he might be a better defensive shortstop than Seager. I mean, he made two plays tonight that I absolutely marveled at, watched on replay multiple times, rewound my TV. It was just incredible defense from Jonathan Ornelas. Let's give the man his props. Great, great game from him. Loved what I saw out there in the field. Glad that he's having some shining moments. Hopefully the back can follow, but we would be remiss if we didn't bring up the amazing defensive performance tonight from Jonathan Ornelas, 100%. But going back to the original comment, was surprised to not see Gray keep going. I think he probably could have thrown a complete game tonight. And I don't think that he would have had trouble getting through the eighth inning there. Look, the ninth inning, it's always a little bit dicey because all of these guys have already seen John Gray a few times through. So, look, I don't know. I think he could have at least finished the eighth inning. Look, Josh Boers, I know, gives up the home run, but credit to him. He settled in, was able to get an out after that, and then Kirby Yates comes in and gets the save, rebounds after the home run given up yesterday. Technically, I don't think Kirby Yates gets anything in the record book for that. You don't get a loss. He doesn't get the win. That's Jonathan Hernandez who got the win. I was thinking about the game yesterday. But anyways, good to see Yates bounce back. Two outs needed tonight. Got a strikeout. No base runners. ERA down to 1.22. Kirby Yates, another great save from him. Despite what happened yesterday, whenever Kirby Yates gets the ball, I feel pretty comfortable. I thought it was the right move going to him. I do hope the offense can get some more runs across. I think the nice thing, you didn't use Robertson today. So Robertson probably going to be the closer tomorrow, if you had to guess, right? Maybe you have Spores able to throw the eighth inning tomorrow and you go Robertson in the ninth. But Kirby Yates, 3 days in a row he's been pitching? So I'm sure that they're going to give him an off day tomorrow. Robertson probably closing. I'm sure maybe you get Leclerc in the seventh, maybe Hernandez in the seventh, and then maybe Spores in the eighth, Robertson in the ninth. Hopefully the Rangers can like build a 5+ run lead though at some point and not be playing 1-run ball games with the worst team in baseball. I mean, please, come on now. You don't have to make every game this close, Rangers. Let's go. Let's go. Let me keep on going here. I do agree. We do need power in this lineup. I think Josh Jung is going to help provide that. We all know Evan Carter's got a little bit of pop. He can drive the ball at least into the gaps, out of the park when he's going well. I got to be honest, I don't know what we're going to get from Evan Carter when he comes back. Like Wyatt Langford, maybe the injury is going to provide him a good reset. Evan Carter was not doing well before the injury. I don't know what we're going to get from Evan Carter. I would expect Josh Jung to come back and do a nice job contributing offensively if he is fully healthy. I do think they're going to solve quite a few problems for the Rangers in this lineup. That being said, I would love a right-handed power bat. From what I hear, I don't think the Rangers are going to get one at the deadline. And I would be a little surprised if they got one in free agency. I think they are really banking on the guys that they have coming through and being exactly what they need to get to the playoffs and win another World Series. I just don't see them acquiring either this trade deadline or in the offseason. I don't see them requiring a right-handed power bat, like somebody legit, right? We're not talking about a depth guy, a bench guy. We're talking about a middle-of-the-order right-handed power bat. I just don't think that it's coming. I would love to be wrong, but I kind of have seen how things have played out. I don't know if the money is going to be there. I don't know if the Rangers are going to spend money on a big name in free agency. I'd love it. You know, this is actually a good transition. A guy that I really wanted to see the Rangers sign, and maybe those of y'all that have been with me since the opening days of Ride on Rangers Live, maybe you remember me saying this. A guy I would have loved to have the Rangers sign was Tommy Pham. Now, I know he's a polarizing player. I know Tommy Pham, the clubhouse, the attitude, the post-game comments. I know he's not everybody's cup of tea. But Tommy Pham's hitting 270 right now for the White Sox. And remember, the White Sox signed Tommy Pham late into spring training. Like, he was kind of the White Sox equivalent signing for our Mike Lorenzen signing. But Tommy Pham, he actually is hitting, let's see, let me look at the stats on him. He's hitting 268, 5 bombs, 18 RBI, OBP 340. Look, he hit very, very well for Arizona last year. I would have liked to have seen the Rangers acquire somebody like him in the offseason. I don't know what his contract is with the White Sox, But as he hit that home run last night, I was thinking to myself, man, instead of Robbie Grossman, this would have been a great guy to go get in the offseason. And that's nothing personal against Robbie. I love Robbie Grossman, part of the 2023 World Series team. I thought it was a feel-good move to get him back. But look, I really think Tommy Pham would have been a great acquisition for the Rangers. You don't know the future. You didn't know Evan Carter, Josh Young, all these guys were going to go down. But it was clear you were always kind of lacking that right-handed power bat. I don't know if you'd completely classify Tommy Pham as a power bat, but he can drive the ball out of the ballpark, no doubt. Anyways, that was a move that I would have liked to see the Rangers make. I don't know if they're going to be getting somebody, though, in the offseason or at the trade deadline. I think, if anything, they're just going to count on Wyatt Langford being an even better version of what he is this year, Josh Young continuing to be a great bat, and then, of course, Seager, Semien, all those guys. I would be surprised. Maybe Garcia turns it around this year or next year after an offseason. I think the Rangers are going to be counting on that. It's just my gut feeling. I'd love to be wrong. I want to see them go out and get somebody. Let me keep going here. John says, do you think Adolis last year makes that play on the one that was off the top of his glove? Was he really hustling? I watched the replay, John, and I really think he was probably going about as fast as he could. Look, it's so subjective. Everybody might have a different opinion. I didn't feel like he was dogging it on that play. I would love to see the advanced stats and just figure out like what exactly the percentages were with the ball like that. You go to, what is it, Baseball Savant or something like that, and they kind of give you all the breakdowns of the expected batting average on different balls that are hit in play. I'd have to get on Baseball Savant, and I'd have to see what the batting average, the expected batting average was on that. I would guess it's pretty high. Now, Doley is a Gold Glover. We expect a lot out of him defensively. He's coming off a Gold Glove. Like I do think we got to put that out there. The expectation should be high for a guy that's won a Gold Glove and just won a Gold Glove. So I was always kind of the old school. You know, my dad super just ground into me, and my coaches did too. That ball hits your glove, you should have caught it. So I am of that old school philosophy and mentality. The ball hits your glove, you should have caught it. You could have done something better to catch it if the ball is hitting your glove. Now, look, some people may disagree, but I think Doley would even probably tell you if somebody asked him point blank, is that a ball that you should have caught? I would like to think, knowing that it hit off his glove and that he was that close, I'd like to think even he would say, yeah, I should have caught that ball. So, look, it's hard to judge. Would have to look at the advanced stats. John, if you're still with me, bud, do you know what inning that was? Because I got Baseball Savant up right now. I could probably look it up. But if you could help me out and maybe tell me the inning, and then I could probably get it up for you in terms of like the percentages, how catchable was that baseball? So anyways, if you got that or if you can get it for me, I'd be much appreciated. I'll try and find it on my own if not. Another comment here, Langford will get better with the power and he is right-handed. So is Garcia. Totally. And I think that's why I said, I think that's going to be the front office's plan. They're saying to themselves, you know, CY is Doley, Josh Young, those are power bats. Those are right-handed power bats. Marcus Semien is a right-handed power bat. I know he hits leadoff. Marcus Semien has had 40 home run seasons. Like Marcus Semien can drive the ball out of the ballpark. So you've got three power bats right there. You've got Semien, you've got Garcia, you've got Young. Of course, you got Langford. You got four right-handed power bats right there. That should be enough. I mean, it really should in a lineup with nine guys in it. Now, again, being greedy, would I like to see another one added in? Yes, I would. And there are some other guys on the team that can drive the ball out of the ballpark, but I do think that is what the Rangers are going to bank on. Gio, what's up, man? Thanks so much for tuning in. Appreciate the comment. Thank you for hanging out with us. Always better to do so after a Rangers win, am I right? 3.5 games back. Let's check on the Angels here. Let's check on the Angels. They are now, let me see here. Come on now. Come on. 5-1. Woo! That's what we're talking about. 5-1. Angels lead the Mariners in the bottom of the sixth inning in Seattle. And we've got the A's up 5-1 as well. So we've got both the Mariners and the Astros losing by four runs about halfway through each respective game. Looks like the A's are threatening. They have a runner on third with two outs here. Actually, runners on the corners with two outs. So, Gio, it might be three games by the time we get off of this live, my friend, wouldn't that be crazy? I don't think anybody was thinking this was how it was going to work out. I mean, I know we all saw the White Sox on the horizon. We saw the Blue Jays on the horizon, and we all kind of said to ourselves, okay, at least we don't have like the Phillies and the Orioles and all the top teams in baseball back to back to back. At least we've got a couple of easier teams that we're facing. You know my stance on this, though, y'all. It's not ever easy when it comes to baseball. That's the beauty of the game. Anybody can beat anybody on any given night. Look, the White Sox throw Garrett Crochet tonight. He goes 8 shutout innings. Let's just say he would have. The White Sox squeak across 1 or 2 runs and you lose. It's never easy. But that being said, you look at the White Sox, 70-plus losses. Those are games in your mind. You've got to win. You've got to win. And so, look, things are lining up well. Let's not get ahead of ourselves too much, but I'm not going to lie to y'all. It's hard. I'm getting my hopes up right now. I'm getting my hopes up. They got 3 games, hopefully, if these results stand, separating them in the division with 60-plus games left. It's going to be really hard, really, really hard for Chris Young to sell off anybody if they are within that kind of striking distance. 100%. Now, let me keep things rolling here. We kind of went through a few of the notable things from the game. Let's get a little bit more detailed here. So, first inning is where the Rangers scored most of their runs tonight, 2 of them out of the 3. Of course, we talked about the Dolley 2-out RBI single. Big moment for him. Hopefully, he'll continue to clutch up in these big spots where he's getting these opportunities. Anytime you can get a 2-out RBI, huge. Absolutely huge, especially with how these Rangers have been playing offensively. That was a big moment, especially going off an all-star pitcher and Garrett Crochet, drawing first blood, taking some pressure off. I loved it. We talked about the first and third play with 2 outs. Dolley had just singled. Rangers decided to do a little first and third play. Dolley steals second, draws the throw from the catcher down to second, stops short of second base. Dolley does. Kind of actually avoids the tag and is actually safe. But Josh Smith, I believe, was on third and is able to take home when they throw down to second to try and get Dolley. And Dolley's little hesitation when he stops and then evades the tag, kind of goes around it, that I think kind of distracted Lopez out at shortstop a little bit. And it allowed Josh Smith that time to get home without a throw. That was a huge run to go up 2-0 in that spot and to squeeze out a run there. Look, if I'm being honest, I was a little surprised because Nate Lowe has been hitting well. He's been seeing the ball well. We've been singing his praises here on the show the last week plus. I was a little surprised they decided to go first and third play in that moment, but it worked out beautifully, and they executed it very, very well, and they're able to go up 2-0 on an all-star pitcher in Garrett Crochet. You'll take that all day long. So I will say this. Squeezing out those runs, I think, set a very positive tone for the rest of the game. I think John Gray, I think it affected him in a positive way. You see what he did tonight, goes, what, almost 8 innings of quality start baseball. I don't know if this was his best outing of the year, and granted, it is against the White Sox, but John Gray pitched extraordinarily well tonight. And it's not a shock to me. You give him a little bit of an early lead, you take some pressure off him, and he throws a great game. So that was, I think, a very key moment in the bottom of that first inning. Then you have the bottom of the 8th, and Josh Smith ultimately gets the RBI in that spot. And I believe at the time of that hit, we had 1 out, I believe. 1 out, Marcus Semien singled, nice line drive. Leody, another very quality sacrifice bunt. I love seeing Leody doing the little things, playing some small ball. That's great. I mean, and he executed it just like last night. I mean, to perfection. And then Marcus Semien draws a throw from Banks, I believe, who was on for the White Sox, and throwing error on Banks. So Semien goes to third. And then Josh Smith able to put one into right field, kind of a bloop hit. He's able to draw a double out of it. That gave the Rangers the 3-1 lead. And it was needed as Benintendi hit a solo shot off Josh Boers in the 9th. Kirby Yates closes it out. Let's go to box score review. We had Simi going 2-for-4. Glad to see Marcus going multi-hit today. Whenever Corey Seager's out of the lineup, you need some of these guys like Marcus to step up and have a big game. Marcus Semien hitting 298 over his last 15 games. .403 OBP over his last 15. You love to see that from Marcus. Those are the numbers we need from a leadoff hitter. .298 and .403 OBP. That's exactly what you need from your leadoff spot. Good on Marcus stepping up in Corey Seager's absence. Robbie Grossman goes 1-for-2 on the night. Eventually, Leody did come in that spot to pinch hit for him. Sacrifice bunt. And, of course, moved to center for defensive purposes. Wyatt Langford moved to left late in the game. Great to see Josh Smith going multi-hit. Josh Smith had not been hitting well. He was hitting below 100 over his last 7 games. Great multi-hit game from him. 2-for-4 with an RBI in that 8th inning to give the Rangers an extra insurance run. Hopefully Josh Smith out of the funk, out of the woods, and we'll be seeing him up to his usual 1-for-3 with a walk stat line. That's the quintessential Josh Smith stat line, 1-for-3 with the walk. But hey, we'll take 2-for-4 as well. That works too. Wyatt Langford 0-for tonight, but he did have a walk, did get on base one time, .251 average on the year. We talked about Dolly, 1-for-3 with a walk for him. Very positive game for Adolis Garcia. Exactly what you want to see from him. Big clutch two-out RBI in the bottom of the first inning. And then the rest of the lineup from there goes 0-for. Jonah Heim does draw a walk, but Foscue goes 0-for-2 with 2 strikeouts. Corey Seager eventually pinch hit for him, and Seager struck out in that pinch hitting performance. Seager, they were showing the stats on his pinch hitting career. It's not great. I think he's like 5-for-30 now, so look, it's hard pinch hitting coming off the bench cold unless you do it professionally like some guys in the major leagues do. They're just professional pinch hitters, bench utility guys, very used to it, very comfortable. When you're a starter and you're used to a pregame routine, going through all of the usual stuff, and then you sit cold for 7-8 innings and then get asked to come up in a big spot, it's not everybody's cup of tea. I don't want to say Corey Seager's not good at it or he's not comfortable up there, but the stats would tend to say he's not probably feeling the most confident up there pinch hitting, going 5 for, I think, his 30 at-bats that he has gotten as a pinch hitter. I think this was the first time that he had pinch hit since 2021. Had not appeared in a game in which he hadn't started since 2021. So been 3 years since a pinch hit performance from him. Not shocked that we didn't get something huge in that moment, but nevertheless, it was good to see him up there. I've complained in the past about how the Rangers refused to pinch hit Corey Seager, so I'm never going to complain when Corey Seager comes up to the plate. When he gets off days, I'd like to see this more. Late innings with a chance to add on or come from behind, get Seager up there. I know he's kind of one of those guys, or at least appears to be, if he gets an off day, it's an off day. But I would love to see Corey Seager take these off days and at least be available to pinch hit late. So I was happy to see that they were willing to use him in that way. Ornelas goes 0-for-3 at the shortstop position. Has a great couple of defensive plays. No hits to show for it. He's 0-for-3 on the night. .176 average on the season. You would imagine when you have Josh Jung coming back, Ornelas probably going to be a guy they consider sending down. I would say Foscue or Nellis probably going to be one of those two guys. I don't know what they're going to do when like Malley and DeGrom come back. I'm not sure what their plan is, whether they're going to need to DFA some guys or what they're going to be able to do. I don't know, but I'm very curious to see what the roster moves look like. I'm sure after the trade deadline, it's all going to come into clarity a little bit more. If the Rangers do trade anyone, you got to make some roster moves, some 40-man moves. And if you don't, then you've got Jung, Carter, Malley, DeGrom on the horizon coming back. So there's going to be some interesting roster decisions. I am very curious to see what the front office, what the coaching staff decides to do with all of these roster decisions, big roster decisions coming up. So let me go ahead and let me go back to the comments here. I'm going to try and piece together and might need you to help me out a little bit if I don't completely connect the dots here. So thank you in advance. Disagree. I think we need a lefty masher or power guy at some point in the future to balance out the lineup. So I do think if you've got all four of those guys that we were talking about, if you've got Josh Jung, if you've got Wyatt Langford, Dolly, Simi, all hitting for power and doing it consistently, then the right-handed power bat maybe isn't needed. All right, so I can go with you on that. But if one of those guys, you know, whoever it is, let's say Wyatt Langford, sophomore slump, Garcia still continues to do what he's doing this year. Now we're talking issues. I do think that a lefty power bat would be interesting. Nate Lowe, it would be great if he could find that consistent power stroke. They talk how much about the show he puts on in BP, Nate Lowe, hitting the ball out of the ballpark. I'd love to see that happen consistently in a game. I would not mind a lefty power bat, but that's assuming that all four of those guys that I just named, Langford, Garcia, Simeon, Young, are all hitting for power consistently. I don't think that the Rangers have had a consistent right-handed home run hitter to this point. Wyatt Langford's coming around. He obviously can be a guy that hits for homers. Simeon is going to hit home runs, but it would be nice to have a guy that's going to be threatening 35 homers, 30, 35. Seager obviously is a 30-plus home run guy when fully healthy, but we need a right-handed power bat that can hit 30-plus. The Rangers may gamble and say, we've already got one of those in one of the four guys that I just named. I'm curious to see. Comment here says, are we having a different conversation about Spores if the score would have been tied, maybe a potential loss, or not to worry? That's a really good question. So here's what I would say with Josh Spores. Always tough, in my opinion. I've said this a lot. And even Josh Spores, he was kind of talking about this in a post game that he did. It's really hard as a pitcher when you come in the middle of an inning and maybe there's a runner on or there's a big hitter up, and you're relieving a starter and you're trying to get out of a jam. There's a ton of adrenaline when you come in the middle of an inning and you're asked to be a stopper. Then you get the out, right? And it's huge. So Spores gets the out and he sends the game to the ninth inning. Then you go sit in the dugout and all that adrenaline that you just had built up subsides a little bit. And then you got to go out there and you got to ramp yourself up again. In my opinion, I think this is a big reason why when the Rangers ask some of their pitchers to go multi-innings, it doesn't always go great. Now, I know Spores only got two outs tonight, technically, but it was a multi-inning appearance for him. He appeared in the eighth, he appeared in the ninth. Now, look at Josh Spores over the season. 3 ERA on the year, very respectable. 12 games he's pitched, and I believe he's only given up two or three earned runs. So I think we're going to forgive Spores. He's had some really big moments. If you remember in the Houston series, he pitched two really huge innings. I believe it was on the Saturday or Sunday right before the All-Star break. So I think Spores, we can forgive the homer. And to his credit, when you know that you've got a 3-1 lead, you've got a two-run lead, there's nobody on base, you pitch and you approach the batters a little bit differently. You know, hey, if I give up a home run here, I'm not giving up the game. So I will say this, when you're pitching with a two-run lead versus a one-run lead, the approach does change a little bit from a pitching perspective. You're a little more willing to pound the zone. You're not being quite as picky, trying to paint the corners. You're trying to be a little bit more aggressive, and you're trying to get outs that way versus trying to be pinpoint perfect with your accuracy. So I think we probably don't need to worry too much about Josh Spores. Number of different factors, I think, go into the fact that he gave up the homer. Obviously not ideal, right? We're not trying to say it's fine. It's great that he gave up the homer. I mean, he would very clearly tell you that it was a mistake and it shouldn't have happened. And look, that is absolutely true. But I think we can point to a few different factors and say, you know, no harm, no foul. Rangers win the game. Josh Spores has been very solid for us in all the games that he's pitched for the most part. So forgivable, in my opinion. I would have rather seen, going back to something that John said earlier, I would have much rather seen John Gray stay in the game through the eighth inning. Then maybe you give Josh Spores that clean inning in the ninth. That would have been my preference. I would have liked to have seen John Gray finish out the eighth. I don't think there was anybody on base, maybe one guy on base in that spot. I'm going to go back and check this out right now in the ninth inning, in the eighth inning it was. So we had a fly out, a ground out. So look, John Gray to that point had nobody on with two out. I would have liked to have seen him get the chance to go a full eight innings. I know it's only a one-run lead at that point. Luis Robert was coming up. Robert on the day, he was 0-for. He had not hit John Gray particularly well. I think it would have been fine. Then you give Josh Spores that clean inning in the ninth. Maybe it goes a lot differently. So look, again, these are the fun things we can be a little bit nitpicky about as fervent Rangers fans with a Rangers win tonight, right? If the Rangers lose this game, then we're going a little bit more of a scorched earth approach on this one. if you know what I mean. But I agree with a lot of y'all who have talked about Gray only at 80 pitches, two outs, nobody on. I know it's a one-run lead, but it's a righty-righty matchup with Robert, who had not gotten a hit off of Gray to that point. 15 straight retired by Gray without a challenge. I heard that stat too. Appreciate you bringing it up. I really feel like that was probably the right move, but look, at the end of the day, the Rangers get the win. Hard for me to be overly critical, but I think the ideal, you know, the ideal flow would have been Gray finishes the eighth, Spores pitches you a clean ninth, gets the save. You rest Yates so you can use him the rest of the week. Now with Yates going 3 days in a row, you pretty much have to rest him tomorrow, and Robertson probably becomes the de facto closer. Maybe you have Spores in the eighth inning since he only had to get two outs tonight. I don't know. We'll see what happens with how they use the bullpen tomorrow. But hopefully they don't have to use anybody too big. Hopefully we can get some runs tomorrow, y'all. Let's get a 5-plus run performance. Enough of these 1-2-3 run scored, 1-2-run games. Enough. Let's have a blowout, please. If it's not too much to ask, Rangers offense, give us a no-sweat win. Come on now. Let me keep going here. Let me head to the pitching box score here. I don't think there's a whole lot to really mull over that we haven't talked about already. Josh Spores, 13 pitches. Kirby, 8-6 pitches. So, again, I think Yates is definitely getting a day off. Only 13 pitches for Spores. Probably should be good to throw tomorrow, if I had to guess. He'll be probably eighth inning guy or high leverage guy tomorrow with Robertson as closer. We'll see. Let me go ahead and give you a little score update. So right now, bottom of the seventh, Angels still lead the Mariners 5-1. The Athletics have tacked on to their lead. They lead the Astros 7-1. So things are looking very positive for the Rangers to gain another half game. They're 3.5 back right now. And with an Astros and Mariners loss, they would move up to 3 games back of the division. Now look, there's so much that can happen between now and the trade deadline. But each game they gain like this is going to ensure just a little bit more that they are not selling off big names at the deadline. So I'm very encouraged by what I'm seeing. There's 60-plus games left. Don't give up. I told y'all I was so mystified to see Rangers Nation, Texas Rangers Insider, accounts that I love, breaking down after the Saturday night loss against Baltimore and saying, let's sell the team. Come on now. Look at this team. We got to sell. I was shocked to see that. And I know a lot of Rangers fans got really down after that Friday, Saturday night. Look, it's the Orioles. It's probably the best or second best team in baseball. We had more favorable matchups upcoming after that Orioles series. You're seeing that play out now. Anything could happen the rest of the week. The Rangers could totally soil the bed and ruin this opportunity. You never know. Right? It's a crazy game. It's a wild game sometimes, but I would say it does appear like some things are lining up for the Rangers at this moment. I think the Rangers, the players, know what's on the line. You know they don't want to break up that clubhouse. I think one thing that you have heard consistently is that it is a great clubhouse environment. A lot of guys really enjoy playing for those players, for that coaching staff. I got to think there's a fire under everybody to compete, play well these next six, seven games before the deadline. Maybe even give CY a reason to add. I'm not thinking they're going to add anybody big, so I'm not saying that. But look, the Rangers went out and got an Austin Hedges type last year. There may be somebody like that that the Rangers could add as bench depth to give them that extra push, to give them that extra clubhouse presence that could push them over the top. We'll see what happens. Here's another comment here before we start previewing the matchup for tomorrow. Do you think any hitters the Rangers add to the lineup in the future will be internally? Walcott's right-handed. Yeah, look, Walcott is blocked. We talked about Walcott, the top Rangers prospect in the minor leagues, right? He plays shortstop. Pretty much any infield position is blocked right now. So you've got Simeon Seager. Seager has been rumored to be moving to first base within the next like 3, 4, 5 years, something like that, which I think probably would be a good move. Now, I don't know how ready Walcott is going to be. Like, is he going to be ready next year to hit major league pitching? I'm sure they're going to give him a spring training invite, and then we'll see. They might have to play around with his position a little bit, which I don't love, to be honest with you. I think the Rangers have done that with certain players in the past. think about like a Yrieksen Profar, right? I think a lot of us remember Yrieksen Profar, Padres All-Star, right? He's doing great things for San Diego this year. He was the top prospect in baseball, the Rangers' top prospect way back when. And the Rangers were just doing all sorts of things with him, having him play outfield, having him play first base, every single infield position. And we've talked about guys like Wyatt Langford, Evan Carter. We've talked about how a lot of these guys are creatures of habit, right? You start messing with their positions and their playing time. And a lot of these guys are used to playing every day one position, right? Evan Carter in the minors played every day center field, right? Wyatt Langford every day outfield. Then you start tweaking with that DH, off day, outfield. And it's tough on some guys. So I'm not in love with the idea of making Walcott a super utility guy like we tried to do with Yrieksen Profar. I would much rather either they decide we're moving Seager to first base, which again has just been rumored. I don't have any hardcore evidence. I've heard Jared Sandler talk about it, although Sandler has basically said, Jared Sandler, Rangers, one of the Rangers radio voices, by the way, if you're not familiar with the name. I've heard him talk about the move from shortstop to first base for Corey Seager down the road later on the back nine of his contract. Don't know exactly when that's going to be. I think if you're not going to move Seager to first and have Walcott come up and play short, he's got to be a trade chip, which I don't know if you want to do, but he's going to be blocked for a while. And if Josh Smith is going to be this guy the rest of his career, I don't think that you can or want to mess with that either. So if Josh Smith is going to be this good the rest of the way, that just makes it even more complicated. So I'm very curious to see what they do. Very curious to see what they do next year. I would imagine Walcott gets the spring training invite. Let's see how he does. Let's see how he does. And yeah, with some of the guys they drafted this year, who knows, right? So Jonah Heim, Gold Glove All-Star catcher, and the Rangers drafted a bunch of catchers. They drafted a catcher in the first round of this draft this year. So again, I'm not a big fan of, we're drafting you as a catcher, but we're going to make you a first baseman, especially a first round guy. Like, I don't know. I know that it's worked out in some scenarios. I mean, look at a guy like Bryce Harper, who is a rare exception. Bryce Harper, one of the best talents in baseball, came up as a catcher, right? Then he moved to the outfield. Now he's playing first base. But Bryce Harper is like a baseball player's baseball player. Like, he is one of the baseball elite of all time. I don't think it's fair to say, well, Bryce Harper did it, so, you know, Walcott or, you know, Dreiling or any one of these guys that the Rangers just drafted, they can do it. I think what Bryce Harper has done going from catcher to outfield to first base is a super underappreciated accomplishment. So again, my preference, if you draft a guy high at catcher, at first base, shortstop, whatever it is, let them play there. Right? That's how they've developed this insane talent to be drafted in the first round. Let them be comfortable there. Just my take on it. Let me keep on going here. So tomorrow, let's get into the game for tomorrow. Wednesday, believe we have another evening start time, another 7:05 Texas time start. So Flexen is going, what a last name, by the way, Flexen. Chris Flexen. He's going for the White Sox tomorrow, 5:22 ERA for Chris Flexen, 0-4 with a 5.50 ERA in his last seven starts, so winless in his last seven starts. His last start was in Kansas City on the 19th, and he got roughed up for 7 earned runs. He had 5 walks, only went 4 2/3. So Flexen is a guy that hopefully the Rangers should be able to get a hold of. Hopefully tomorrow is the big offensive day for the Rangers. I'm knocking on wood right now. I hope y'all can hear it through the mic. I'm not trying to jinx it, but I surely hope that the Rangers are able to get to Chris Flexen tomorrow, sporting a 5.22 ERA. Come on now. Come on now. Let's see if we've got any matchup type stuff that we can throw your guys' way. We always like to go through the opposing lineups with the opposing pitchers, tell y'all if there's anything we can look forward to, if one of the guys in the lineup has the pitcher's number, that kind of thing. So let's check out the preview here. By the way, Evo going tomorrow, you got to think Evo is ready to bring it. Evo has, in my opinion, and for Evo standards, has had a couple of starts in his last 4 or 5, very un-Evo-like last start against Baltimore. He gave up 6 earned runs. They were hitting the ball out of the ballpark. I don't expect the same thing to happen against the White Sox. I think Evo is going to have a great game for us, looking to rebound against his poor showing against Baltimore last weekend on Friday. Last seven games for Evo, 4.29 ERA. So look, again, kind of adding to my point, hasn't been the Evo in his last seven games that we all know and love consistently. He has had some gems mixed in there. The one in Houston comes to mind. He had a great outing against Tampa Bay, but there's a couple in there where the home run ball was there and there were some walks given up. So I think tomorrow is going to be a good game for Evo. This lineup that the White Sox are throwing out there, not very good. Hopefully he can bounce back, have a shutdown game for the Rangers, and then the offense can have some fun facing off against Chris Flexen. That's the plan. Let me check this out here for the preview. So Texas against Flexen. Garcia batting 316 with two bombs in 19 career at-bats. So Dolly sporting a 10-13 OPS against Flexen in his career. Hopefully Dolly can build off of his 1-for-3 performance tonight with a walk and an RBI. We've got Jonah Heim, 1-for-12. That does not look so hot. Jonah Heim, 1-for-12 versus Flexen career. We've got Andrew Kisner, 1-for-2. Nate Lowe is, I believe, hitting, I think, something like 6-for-20 or 8-for-20. Trying to do some quick mental math here, y'all. Two bombs, though, Nate Lowe has hit off Chris Flexen. So another guy that we maybe circle for having a big day tomorrow. Nate Lowe, two homers and 20 career at-bats against Chris Flexen. Corey Seager, 2-for-5. Career. Marcus Semien, 5-for-15 with two bombs against Flexen. Josh Smith, 2-for-6. Leody Taveras, 1-for-6. So I see a lot of positives there. On the other side, Evo against the Chicago White Sox. Benintendi, 2-for-6. Jimenez is 1-for-3 with a homer. We have Lopez, the second baseman, 6-for-12, batting .500 against Evo. Tommy Pham, 2-for-6. Robert is 2-for-5 with the homer. Senzel 0-for-3. Sheets 0-for-5. Vaughn 1-for-3. So a mixed bag. A couple of guys that have taken him deep. Jimenez and Robert. Other than that, Lopez is about the only other guy that I'd really be too worried about. I think Tommy Pham last year in the World Series did hit a home run off Evo in game one, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that's right. So maybe a couple of guys to look out for. But like I said, Evo being the competitor that he is, and you know Evo wants this team to stay relevant. Evo has been a big trade talk guy. A lot of teams covet Nate Eovaldi. You know Chris Young has been taking some calls about Evo. The Cardinals are interested. There's a few other teams that I saw that are interested in Nate Eovaldi. You know that he's got that in his mind, and he's going to be ready. I don't think he's a guy that succumbs to pressure easily. I think he's going to go out there and have himself a game because Evo likes Texas, right? He's a Texas boy, has a great rapport and relationship with Chris Young. He doesn't want to get traded, right? A lot of these guys, Scherzer made it clear the other week, he doesn't want to get traded. He's not accepting a trade. I think a lot of these guys know what's at stake. I think we're going to continue to see some really, really good games from some of the Rangers' best, and hopefully that'll continue tomorrow. Let me keep things up here. What's up, man? Thanks so much for tuning in again. Eli, appreciate you, bud. Thank you for choosing Right on Rangers. Appreciate you. All right, let's keep things rolling. Let's look at the scores one more time from around the league. So we have got, again, two games AL West related. We've got Astros and A's. We've got Angels and Mariners. Rangers are trying to go up to three games back in the division. Right now, bottom of the eighth inning, two outs. Mariners have a runner on first. It's still 5-1 Angels. The A's are up 7-1 with that game going to the bottom of the seventh. So things are looking good, y'all, for the Rangers at the end of tonight to be just three games back in the AL West. The Rangers were just out like 9 or 10 games a second ago. So to see three games back in the West, super fun, especially coming at a great time right before the trade deadline. Let's hope the Rangers can stay hot. Let's make it four straight wins tomorrow, and hopefully they can just keep on cruising through the rest of this week out to Canada, out to Toronto, do some good things out there, head to St. Louis right before the trade deadline, and who knows, a lot could be different in a week. That's what's crazy about this time of year. We're going to be here for y'all after every single game, bringing you the post-game analysis. Appreciate y'all hanging out. We're going to go through the headlines and then get out of here. So the headlines for today, Tarik Skubal for the Tigers continues to be a huge, huge trade item. I don't know why the Tigers are so eager to get rid of him. He's under control till 2027, but Dodgers really, really interested in Tarik Skubal from the Tigers. Tarik Skubal possibly going to win the Cy Young this year. We'll see. The Dodgers are also in on Randy Arozarena, who I think is having a little bit of a down year, but clearly a guy that has some talent. By the way, the A's just made it 8-1. I think somebody just hit a solo shot. So 8-1, A's over the Astros in the bottom of the seventh. Beyond that, we talked about Paul Skenes already. He got his first loss tonight as a big leaguer. That's crazy. Paul Skenes came up, in May? And he finally gets his first loss as a big leaguer. And we're almost in August. That's pretty wild. Great run for him. Tough luck loss. He gave up, I think, 2 runs in almost 9 full innings pitched. Let's see. Anything else here? Lance Lynn, former Texas Ranger, now pitching for the Cardinals. Of course, Lance Lynn pitched for the Cardinals at the beginning of his career before he came to Texas. I loved Lance Lynn as a Texas Ranger, man. He just gutted out, grinded out starts. Fastball pitcher, right? He was not a guy that was painting corners left and right. Just one of those fastball pitchers that just gutted out start after start for you. And he got his 2,000th strikeout today. Good milestone for him. And beyond that, there's not a whole lot else. So we are going to call it a night, y'all. We appreciate you hanging out. Glad to be with you after another win. And hopefully we can do it again tomorrow night and Thursday and Friday. Let's see if we can get our longest win streak of the season. Wouldn't that be nice? That would sure be nice for me and my challenge, betting 1 cent on Texas Rangers money line. Basically a Texas Rangers win, right, for every follower that I have. We're getting real close to 10,000 followers, so that would mean our first $100 bet of the season. It could get crazy here in a few days. We are about 50 or 60 followers away from 10,000 total followers across all platforms. Big milestone for us here at Ride On Rangers. We're excited for it. And that leads me right into asking y'all, if you know somebody that loves the Rangers, you know somebody that loves baseball, please tell them about the account. Tell them about my channel. Send them one of my videos. I would be greatly appreciative. And if you're not following, you're watching right now, but you're not following the account or not subscribed to the channel, please consider doing so. You can get notified every time we go live, stay up to date with all of our latest and greatest content. That would be awesome. So thank you so much, guys. Once again, I'm going to sign off for the night. I hope you guys have a great rest of your Tuesday. Hope to see you tomorrow on the live. If not, maybe sometime on the replay. But as I always like to say at the end of every show, God bless, go Rangers, and hopefully we'll be back here tonight to do it again after another Rangers win. Good night, y'all. Bye now.